I'm doing well, and you, Scott? I'm sure. Well, that's kind. That's very kind. No, because Elvis has left the building. Yeah, right. That's right. Well, that'll be in the New York Times books. Yeah. Come on. That's a well-framed question. I think that where I would probably go is that purpose is hard to nail down because it's easy to convince ourselves that we are being purposeful without looking at the way that we avoid it. Another way of saying that is, I think that primarily, part of what drove me in this direction is that I began to feel that congregations either erred on the side of being aspirational and having this, wonderful language to talk about their aspirations, or they had they kind of leaned into being preferential. This is the way we like to do things, and this is what we do. Okay. In both cases, it would be pretty easy to convince yourself that you're being purposeful in that. I mean, if I can tell you my aspirations, it's almost as if I'm telling you what I do. But in fact, aspirations are not actions. But I can convince myself, you see where I'm going with this. And the same thing with preference. What do you do? Well, we have worship services and we do it at 10 o'clock and we do it this way and we do it that way and we do it. All of that is talking about action, and it feels as if it's purpose. And so I think it's easy, actually easy, to hide from ourselves that we can be terribly busy without accomplishing anything. Ah, there you go. Yeah, right. Yeah, and at its work, at its worst, it's actual work avoidance. It's the way that we invent for ourselves to keep us from the difficult stuff of what we're supposed to do. Right. Right. Well, I just recently had an experience with a local church, which I think is somewhat symptomatic, and that is that they set aside some time and some effort, asked some people to get into that discerning mode about who are we and what are we called to do, what are we going to make different. And after a significant amount of investment in that, they came up with a pretty good statement. And it would be the kind of statement that if I was the pastor or a key lay person in that congregation, I'd be eager to have that to say, okay, now we can use this to start aligning what we're trying to do here and get ourselves. And the overwhelming response from this congregation was, oh, that was really good. That work is done. Let's go back to what we've been doing. And so they separate it out. They make it a discrete effort as opposed to the heart of what they're trying to do. Well, I think that for anybody who's in that kind of position, you have to make a decision. Do I actually want to try to lead this? Do I want to step in? I have to remind myself, I am not the pastor here. I am not, an elected lay person here. It is not my role to try to convince them that they have to move in a particular way. I've been part of I've been a conversation partner, and I've done what I've been asked to do. And I will take what I've learned from that and try to shape my own purpose and try to go back to that. But I am not invested in trying to make people purposeful. I think you can hurt people by doing that. Either hurt them out of a sense of judgment or hurt them by trying to make them do something that they don't have the capacity for. And I think you have to be careful with communities when you're working with them. This isn't about making perfect congregations. Right. Well, no, I think you've got your finger very much on the right spot here. Developmentally, where is this group of people, either spiritually or organizationally, and what is appropriate? Appropriate is a huge issue for me. Appropriate means you're doing what can be done and what, what can be heard, and you're saying what can be heard. As opposed to trying to come up with the grand solution for everything or the answer to everything. One of the things that we've talked about a lot at TMF is doing worthy work. That when you're working with a group, what you discover, or with a congregation or even another individual, what you discover is that there might be a whole host of possibilities there. You could take this conversation or this work in any of a multiple number of ways. But the question has to do with what is the worthy work that has to be done. And worthy work, has kind of a definition for me, and that is work that can actually make a difference and that can actually be done. And so what we're trying to do there is name some work that is not so aspirational that it's out of reach, but that if you actually do it, it makes the difference that you're after. And so how do you find that sweet spot is what you're looking for. Oh, yeah. Right. And, and the energy is going to drive in a whole lot of different directions. And so the reason that you actually work at identifying the purpose and the outcomes is so that when the energy starts to crop up, you have direction. You have a pathway that you can follow, a North Star to follow, that will say, yeah, this is what we're after, as opposed to all these other things that suddenly we're interested in. And so this issue of being purposeful is one of aligning yourself with the purpose that you've discovered, with the outcomes that you've discovered. Yeah. Well, but I think that, there's an awful lot of nuances in this area. When the book on, The Purposeful Life came out, think about the response that it got. It was huge. People resonated with that. Okay, so then the question is, what are they resonating with? Well, I think that, you can play that game to quite some time, but just think how healthy that whole thing was. You had people asking, what difference am I trying to make, or am I supposed to be making? People who are searching for meaning are finally saying, well, wait a minute, there's a way to have this conversation. I thought that that was a remarkable gift that that book, gave us, and it just kind of got us started on the conversation. But then you have to find your way into it. And so, one of the ways I think that the metrics work that we did at TMF was so helpful is that it helped to develop that language that says that if we're going to talk about purpose, one of the better ways to do that is to talk about difference. What difference are you trying to make? Because, purpose is all about precipitating a necessary change. Okay, if that's the case, then what's the change? And I mean, this is the whole thing. We make it disciples of Christ for Jesus Christ for the transformation of the world. Okay, so even in that, which believe me is very aspirational and unfocused, you are still acknowledging that our purpose is to change individuals' lives, in other words, to make them into disciples. And to change communities. In other words, for the transformation of the world. Okay, in both cases, we've committed ourselves to making a change. Perfect. But then the work that you come from there is then, okay, right now, where we are, with who we are, and with what we know, what is the change that we're being asked to commit ourselves to? And so it isn't until you push it down to that level of saying, and it really kind of pushes us always to, no matter what the global need is, the work always has to be local. Probably in ways that you would imagine. I mean, any of this kind of effort for all of us falls along a continuum. It's not as if some people get it right and some people get it wrong. It's all on a continuum. And so in that continuum, think about the groups that you've been with that have been just simply bold and courageous. They've been terribly bold and courageous, and they name things that they knew were absolutely important and necessary that they may not know how to get to, but they were bold enough to name it and say, that's the difference we're after, as opposed to some groups that are just going to be terribly modest in their discerning. And so, you get, responses all along that continuum. I think that, we'll go back to the earlier part of the conversation here. It's when communities go into this time of discernment only to discern something that they discover that they're uncomfortable with, that they then pull back and either, you know, kind of translate it into an aspirational motto, and now we're done, or they subvert themselves and just go back to what they've always known. And so, you know, I think that when you're faced into that kind of change, it is possible for discerning purpose to scare ourselves and to kind of subvert what we were actually after and what we've opened ourselves up to. But the other part about that is that it's a terribly frightening time. You know, we are in this cultural unwinding, and nobody knows where it's going to go. And our institutions, as much as they're needed, they are not trusted and they're not respected. And so, and at the same time, most of the congregations that you and I work with are worried about their own resources and their own future. And so, in the midst of all this anxiety, you know, you do this work of discerning that says, well, just walk into the wilderness in this direction. Well, that's not the most comforting message I've ever heard. You know, and so it is easy because of the anxiety that we feel, because of the confusion that is around us. And it's not just confusion in religious organizations. This is a cultural confusion we're living into. It's a very unsettled time. This is why Susan Beaumont keeps coming back to that liminal moment. I mean, there is nothing clear here for us. And so how do you kind of walk boldly into some kind of a purpose or a difference, you know, knowing that it is the right way, without also realizing that you're risking something of importance here? You know, you could blow it on this one. You could run through all your resources and come up empty. And so again, you know, this is one of the other reasons that when we had these conversations, they must stay local. They have to be where we are, who we are, when it is, in order to make it move ahead. And that gives me the confidence to say, yeah, it's going to work.
Right.
Yeah, I think that, yes. Yeah, I think actually it's one of the most hopeful times because people are sufficiently aggrieved and hurt and disappointed that they know that there's something better, that there's something else, and that there is this active seeking after community. There is this active seeking for something better. And so I don't think you can get much more hopeful. I mean, you know, I know that this has a political contrast that you may not want to pursue a whole lot. But you can't get much lower than January 6th and the insurrection of the Capitol. And then when you hear January 20th and the investment of a new president talking about we are all in this together, how do you tamp down hope? I mean, you know, you've just been at the lowest point. You've just heard somebody point to a higher point. Why not go there? I mean, so I think culturally we are at that moment. And so, yeah, there's a lot of hope here. I don't think there's, you know, I don't think we're in a bad way at all. I think we're at a point of a turning a cultural turning of values where it will be confusing for quite some time. But the more you put your hand to it, the more it's going to move in a healthy direction. Well, let's see if we can pursue at least a couple of these. One is that this is kind of hanging on that hook of saying that if you want to take a look at what we've learned from church growth and all of the techniques and all of the programs of church growth that we've discovered over the last couple of decades, it's pretty easy to point to some congregations that did everything right and did not grow, and to simultaneously point to congregations that did everything absolutely wrong and could not stop their growth. Okay. Now, when you take a look at that, suddenly what you realize is this has nothing to do with what the congregation inside was doing, because it was all driven by the surrounding demographics. You're in the right place at the right time, and it's going to happen. Even if you don't want it, you're going to grow. And so there is that part of it. Okay, so if you translate that from particularly from the 1920s through the 1950s, all of our churches were just in that situation that no matter what they did, they were going to grow. This is what good old what's her name were talking about, that in a rising tide, all boats go up. You don't have to do anything, you just ride the wave. All right, now the dilemma with that is that we got used to it, and that was a period in which almost no congregations asked questions of purpose because they didn't need to. All right. I had this wonderful conversation. I was doing some long range consulting with the Dutch Reformed Church in South Africa at the end of apartheid. And one of the things that they realized is that they were just struggling mightily as consultants to congregations there, because congregations had no vocabulary for purpose. And the reason for that is because they didn't need one. For a couple of generations, just the whole culture had driven everybody toward the Dutch Reformed Church, because that was the church of wealth and power. And, you tried to get there without asking them what they did. After apartheid, when they didn't have that favored position in the culture, suddenly people weren't coming at them anymore, and they didn't know what to do, and they didn't know how to ask questions about who they were and why they were. They had lost their language of purpose. Does that make sense? Okay. Well, I was just going to say is that, I think that there is a parallel there to the mainline church in the first half of the 20th century, that we had somewhat lost our language of purpose. we had simply became one of the institutions that was thriving at a time when institutions thrived, and we aligned ourselves very closely to cultural values, and could not for ourselves even distinguish between cultural and spiritual values. Lauren Mead, was really clear to say that we had conflated, kind of discipleship and citizenship as if they were the one and the same. And so that meant that we were coming into a time when, the tide was going out and ships were sinking all around us, and we had lost our capacity to discern. We had simply learned how to be responsive rather than, intentional. We're using some really large analogies here, so I don't know whether this is helpful, but I mean, we have to locate ourselves in this stuff in order to figure out how to move ahead. Mm-hmm. Right, right. Well, sure. Look at what you had your finger on there, Scott. The way that the United Methodist Church developed itself after after its last merger that made it the United Methodist Church was this replicated hierarchy that the global church, the global church, and the national church were to have its own, kind of regional components that matched, and all of your pieces were supposed to align with all the boards and the agencies, and the local church was supposed to be able to do the same thing with the local, with the annual conference. And so we had this replicated system as if everything that was important was to be able to support the system above you, which was completely an institutional question, which had nothing to do with purpose. It simply had to do with vitality of an institution. Well, and what's happened recently is that, that field has been reversed to try to push everything down to the local church, which is where, the purpose actually happens. Yeah. Well, I think we're working on that language as we speak, and I think that people, the leaders that we have that are developing that language, are the ones who are finding resonance with the people around them, and that they're getting a lot of response. But the other thing that I would say is that this is one of the reasons why TMF is looking outside of the established church and starting to pay attention to a lot of the entrepreneurial things that are happening, because those entrepreneurial efforts are working with a language of poetry and prophecy that is reframing the comfortable familiar language that we have in new ways to energize it and to give it a different focus. The attention that TMF is paying to metaphors at this point. I think what we're doing is we're looking for the language, the ideas, the metaphors that can carry the freight that will help us to say, yeah, all this stuff that, that we have been so familiar with really is of deep value. And here's a way to pursue it. So I think that process is already well in hand. But in this time of unwinding, it simply is messy. There's no coalescing yet of bringing this stuff together. But boy, it's stirring up well. Yeah, sure. And I'm not sure, if you want to get this specific, but in the pandemic, one of the things that has happened for Lynn and for me is that along with getting on Zoom with our own local congregation, we worship at Christ United Methodist Church in Manhattan. It's just a wonder, it's a place that is home for our spirits. It's just been great. And the pandemic has taught us how to be able to do that. Okay. So that congregation simply says that, they follow the Great Commandment, that their purpose is to love God and to love their neighbor. All right. There's not anything particularly poetic about that, except that they are exceptional about being able to reframe it in multiple ways to continue to point back to that. And then they say, and here's how we are doing it. And so the poetry comes not, okay, so what I'm after here is that poetry isn't necessarily just finding new ways, new words, or new ways to put words together. But poetry is a way of being able to infuse them with the energy and with the spirit that says, oh, wait a minute, there's something of great value here. And it just is, it's the context in which they're able to set it. And so, for a guy like me, the Book of Worship in the Episcopal Church is a gold mine. I can get lost in that because of just the resonance I feel with that language. It just sings for me. Hey, wait a minute, there's nothing new with this. I mean, I still like the one that came out of, what was it, 1875? And so it is, but it's in a context that says, wait a minute, these words are important. And I can feel it. Okay. And and when I'm in that liturgy, I can go so far before I have to mentally stop because something caught me up and said, ooh, did you see that? It takes you someplace. Okay, so when I'm talking about this kind of poetry and prophecy, it isn't as if I'm saying that we need artists who can reframe this in captivating ways. It's that we need to be able to take a language. Brueggemann talks about this that we have taken too much of our language and put it into a prose form, which has deadened it. We've made it into these logical propositions, when in fact the poetic way just allows it to pop and to zip, and to say, when Christ Church says that, with everything else that's happening in the world, that there are these two things to pay attention to: loving God and loving your neighbor. And oh, by the way, here's how we do it. Boy, for me, it just brings it into focus and gives it energy and says, well, yeah, of course. And so, I don't know that I'm particularly good at describing that, but that there is this search for that which has energy. And frankly, a lot of the new stuff that I'm watching, I'm watching from the sides, from the side as an old man. It isn't as if they're saying remarkably new things, but for some reason it comes out different. Well, you're kind, Scott, and if I'm a poet, then you need higher standards. That's all I can say. Okay. All right. Yeah. Oh, sure. So you just need that phrase from me. Yeah, okay. So TMF and the Wesleyan Investive. Now, is that enough to work with? Yeah, okay. And thanks for pointing that out. Thanks for pointing that out because it's not something that rests right in front of my consciousness because of where I've been. Right. Well, how about a sentence like one of the things that I appreciate about the work that TMF and the Wesleyan Investive have been doing? Something like that. Okay, and maybe that'll. What's that? Oh, sorry. Yep, okay. All right, and so let me take another run at that sentence. And part of what I appreciate about what the work of TMF and the Wesleyan Investive has provided for us is, and then, wherever we were in that or that kind of stuff. Good pickup. Thank you. Yeah.